It's Hump Day Replay.
Hump Day Replay.
Yeah. We get this in Hump Day Replay.
My favourite day of the week.
Oh, there we go. Right.
Georgie boy.
He's done it again.
It's
Hump Day Replay, the show about the Daily Talk Show, where we look back at highlights from the week and chat about them with a guest. And today we've got actor, director, musician, boxer. What else?
I don't know. I'm a boxing enthusiast. I wouldn't identify as a boxer.
Gymnast? You're a gymnast?
I used to be. I used to compete in gymnastics. That's true. Ooh. I'm not a gymnast anymore, though.
Oh, really?
Ex-gymnast.
Nah. Ex.
Ex-gymnast. Well, ex-gymnast. Reese Mitchell, everybody. He's wearing his Gronk tee. Looking really good.
Wow.
How are you feeling?
Feeling all right. Yeah, can't complain. You know, I'm not the gymnast I once was, but I feel okay.
I mean, we're all still feeling a little bit tired. September 2, David Blaine. we had to stay up all night, 2 a.m. So we're still on the recovery. But
was he? Yeah, watch that. Was he floating around in balloons?
Yeah,
he was.
Yeah, that was it. It was okay.
I mean,
so
Jesus.
He grabbed a bunch of balloons, floated up, and parachuted down. And it was live streamed across the world via YouTube. And, I mean, Josh was just obsessed with it.
He basically lives like a 10-year-old. Like what a 10-year-old would think that they would do when they're an adult.
Yeah.
You know, it's the kind of things you imagine as a child. Like, I'm going to float up with balloons and parachute down.
I think that was the whole idea. I think he saw the movie Up or whatever. Yeah. and then wanted to copy it. So he grabbed on a bunch of balloons, floated up. I mean, it was pretty good.
He's probably like in cahoots with the devil, and that's why he can do this stuff. He made a deal.
We've got Jess and Grace here as well again. Thank you guys for coming on again.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure.
What else have we got to do today, George?
Yeah, I know.
This is a highlight of the week.
That's the thing with that. With COVID, there's not much going on, really. There's like, if you try and latch on to any bit of entertainment that you can. And I think that's exactly what Josh did with the David Blaine stuff. He just went crazy this week. He roped Tommy into it, and then he even told Mason to use it as a talking point during an important meeting.
Which I am not over. I find that so fucking funny. Who gives advice for
small talk?
What the hell? That is the definition of a micromanager.
David Blaine.
He's like the Houdini on steroids, but Houdini probably has a bigger brand.
He probably is on steroids. On August 31, Ascension is happening. He's got a bunch of balloons and he's going to hold on to them and he's going to let it take him up into the sky.
I haven't been this into magic since I was 10.
David Blaine postpones helium balloon flight. The new date is September 2. So it's going to be a late one.
You stay up?
It's something to fucking do.
Coming in a little tired this morning. You and I have both had about 5 hours sleep. The card tricker. He did something pretty wacky. Like my arsehole was clenched.
Mason had a big business meeting yesterday. I was very excited for him. Can you explain the advice I gave?
He's like, mate, bring up the fact that we're all tired from watching David Blaine. I have a little panic at the start. I was like, man, small talk, what do I say? And I was like, man, we are so tired. The whole team, like, we stayed up watching David Blaine all night.
You didn't even watch it. Is that right?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't even
watch it.
Oh, my God.
So that was a little bit from the start as well. I had a bit of a panic, didn't know what to talk about, but yeah.
Tommy is such a poet. My asshole was clenched the whole time is his response.
Real way with words.
Oh, yeah.
You can feel that though. You know what that feels like.
Yeah, I know. It was like that. Like my feet were sweating when I was watching it. It was pretty crazy. But I mean, there's been other live streams that have been more crazy than that one, to be honest.
Mm.
Like really? I mean, what live streams have you seen?
Felix Baumgartner.
Yes.
Jumped out of a bloody like spaceship.
There's a little capsule that went up into like the atmosphere or whatever.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where it was almost, I think, edge of space sort of vibe, and then he just jumped and he was in free fall. I think he held the record for the longest free fall, and then And then an executive from Google actually did it 2 weeks later and beat his record by 15 meters.
Oh, really?
How annoying.
Was that something to do? Was that something to do with Google? Like, what, was that a publicity thing? I'm serious. Probably. Why?
I don't know. So Red Bull was a publicity thing, but I reckon this bloke was just like, you know, all cashed up from Google and just went and did it. Pretty outrageous.
Have any of you jumped out of a plane?
I have actually.
No, have you, I want to.
It's really good.
It actually is. Isn't
it? Yeah.
Where did you do it, Reese?
In Queensland when I was like 16 or something. I did 14,000 feet. I think that's like...
Yeah.
I did it tandem, obviously. But I had a friend who...
I hope so.
Yeah, I had a friend who trained to do it by himself and he got tangled in the air. First ever jump. And he untangled himself in the air and survived.
Oh, my God.
He's one of those people, horrific. You know. Yeah, he did like a week's course and then jumped out of a plane.
A week.
Wow. It's funny how it's like when before you jump.
I love how I did 4 years for a comms degree and he had like he did a week for jumping out of a plane. What the hell?
I know. It's quite mad. But the tandem one, they just like cross your arms, open them up, you know, they'll count to three or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. And then you go.
When did you do it, Maze?
I did it straight after high school. So we went to New Zealand and I did it in Wanaka, I think it was, like Wanaka. And so it was, I think it was the same as you, Reece, like 14,000 feet or whatever.
Mm.
And surprisingly, I wasn't, like I thought I was going to be way more scared because I don't like heights.
Yeah.
And, but it was more just like when you come out of the plane, it's more just like a floating sensation.
Yeah. It's quite like surreal. You don't realize you're falling. And the free fall is only like 45 seconds, but it feels like 10 minutes of just... Yeah. Seeing it looks like you're just looking at a landscape or something like a painting.
That's the thing because, that's exactly the same. I was like, I'm going to be scared of this because I'm scared of heights. But as soon as you're falling down, the earth isn't getting any closer. So, like, you can't, there's no depth there. It doesn't actually feel like you're hitting the ground.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
And then you're floating perfectly still because they've got, like, the stabilizer coming out of your back or whatever. And so you're just kind of, like, hovering.
Yeah. I've never had such an empty mind. You know, I imagine that's like what people who meditate regularly feel. That kind of like you literally can't think of anything else. You're just present because it's the most overwhelming experience, the most overwhelming sensation. And obviously your adrenaline is pumping like crazy. So you're just have the most clear and blank mind, which is probably why people get addicted to it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what I wouldn't try though, bungee jumping. I've done that. I wouldn't recommend that. That's scary as shit. Yeah, don't do that. The fear of falling, like GB, you can see the ground coming. Like it's not good.
I imagine it like wrenches your spine.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. The tug's not bad.
Is it gradual or is it like a sudden like?
It's a little bit gradual. The scariest part though is just like, when you waddle out to the edge because your legs are bound, you've got no balance. So you're just like holding on to shit and you don't know if you're going to like accidentally fall off.
Mm.
But then when you jump, like the ground just comes so quickly. Yeah. It's nothing like skydiving. I would pick skydiving any day over a bungee jump.
I mean, I'm glad I got this shit out of my system when I was like 16, 17, 18. You know, once you get a bit older, you start to realize like you're actually very vulnerable at all times.
Mm.
Like you can, what's the point? Really? Yeah. I mean, like, sure, it's a big rush, but it feels so risky. Although I guess statistically it's not. You're probably more at risk driving a car. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess.
But it's just like, I don't know if there's any point in taking those, like floating up with balloons or whatever. Like I'm happy David Blaine's doing it, but like fucking hell, that's pointless.
Yeah, what does it achieve?
Yeah. But then again, it's kind of cool. I mean, like everything is ultimately meaningless. You might as well float up and bungee, like parachute. It makes more sense than like just sitting in an office all day long, making someone rich. You know, although because he's earning a fortune, he's supporting his family, floating around. So
that's true.
It's actually quite clever.
We're justifying it.
Yeah, it's like he's managed to find a hole in the market. No one else is doing it. Yeah. I mean, everyone's talking about him.
Mm, yeah,
he might be a genius actually. I've gone like full circle on this guy. I'm like, he's in the dark arts, but now I'm like, actually, I don't know. I'm like, it's eccentric and like power to him.
It is
we
wacky,
should stop trying to, you know, we need to encourage more eccentricity and like, you know, more people more like that. It's what make life. What's make life. What makes life fun? I can really speak right
now. Outside the box.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I'm sure you've come across a bunch of crazy people in LA. Like,
oh yeah,
is there?
Oh my god! By the way, sorry. Can I just go back? Remember when I spoke about the bee thing?
Oh mate,
yeah.
I sent the article to the guys. The Uber driver was right.
I know. We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Yeah. It's profound.
Have you actually had any wacky sort of like business meetings, like auditions that you go to where you're just like, man, that person's like number one eccentric, but like what they're doing is outrageous.
I think it's more that I've made a fool of myself, you know?
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, you know, I had an audition. I don't know if I mentioned this ever on the show, but I had to, it was a casting director who's quite influential and someone I really wanted to be in the good books of. And at one point I was, and I went in and I did this scene and I had to sing like a Broadway song. And have I spoken about this on the show? Like right before me, like a guy from Riverdale went on. From Riverdale, like a real hunk type guy, was in the room and I could hear him just
the
like
Aussie guy?
No, American, oh, Canadian. Oh, and like piercing blue eyes, you know, like ripped, like all those Riverdale guys. Like just a caveat, like the way Netflix imagines high school students is so insane. And like young people, like these bodybuilders, like they look like Bondi street sharks. Anyway, but I go into this like this audition. I have to sing this Broadway song and I've just heard this Riverdale guy like nailing it. And it was just so unsettling because he was like just nailing the song, like hitting it. Like he's obviously musical theater trained, which I am not, surprisingly. Uh-huh. And then I went in and like just did the audition. I could see that it was going okay. And as soon as I sung the song, it was like I felt they couldn't get me out of the room quick enough because it was such a specific style of singing, you know? It was like full on Broadway. And it was so humiliating and just like probably one of the worst experiences I've had in an audition. And also one time where I had to do a scene in Spanish and I had the flu and I was just like, and they said, just go home and tape it yourself. And it was just humiliating. Yeah, it's so bad because you burn a bridge so easily there, you know.
Yeah.
So in auditions, do they like, if you haven't made the role or even if you have potentially got the role, aren't they? Do they just kick you out and they just be like, we'll call you later?
No,
or do you get any vibe that you might have done well?
Yeah, sometimes you do. Everyone varies, but you know when it's going badly. You know what I mean? It's like going on an awkward date.
Yeah, sure.
It feels like dating every time. You're like, you got to, you know, just try and impress someone and like show off about like and talk about who you are and hope they like you and invite you back. But, you know, there's a lot of that. LA's a weird town though, man. You meet so many weirdos all the time.
Yeah, right. But aren't they're all like quite supportive in that industry, aren't they? Like, oh man, you're going to make it.
I think that culture exists, but I don't know. It can be pretty cutthroat too. You know, people are pretty competitive. Mm. So
that on the public humiliation stuff.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever done the magic, like magic on the side of the street? Like GB, Jess, Grace, Reese, have you guys done any magic before in front of people?
Oh, no way.
No. Only I used to do magic just around the house with Dad and stuff. But no, I never did the busking thing.
I never did it busking. It was part of a job though.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Part of the job description.
So, yeah. So when I worked at Maya like what, the year after high school finished, I think.
Maya
as in like shopping centre Maya.
Yeah, that's
Your department store. Around Christmas time, one of their major products that they were pushing was these magic sets. So there was like two of us that got trained up in to do like all the magical tricks. And then we just had to perform them for shoppers like for 3 hours at a time. And it was so embarrassing because my friends would come and I was like, oh, here we go. Like, do it show us a trick, Grace. I'm like, okay,
I used to have to dress up as like Sonic the Hedgehog at gaming expos and I did Santa Claus for a while. I worked for like a promotion company and it was like at Meijer and stuff as well. And I remember seeing my actual boss, and I was in, you know, I go into a storeroom and inflate this fucking costume and put on like a beard and the hat and everything. And thankfully no one could recognize me, but it was utterly humiliating. And the company never paid me. They also didn't wash the costume. So you get into the Sonic and some other, because we were all the gymnasts would do it. Like after your, you know, your gymnastics career has concluded at the age of 20 or whatever, you know, you like go and do these jobs and then you put on these suits and they used to have like, they'd be full of sweat from like the day before. It was so filthy.
It's disgusting.
And like nerds just punch you in the back of the head and stuff.
Oh my goodness.
Well, speaking of unique jobs and crazy things in LA, you did mention this story last time you were on the show, Reese. And like you said just before, it's kind of come full circle and the Uber driver you were talking about might have been onto something.
I got a great B story, actually.
Really?
I'm in an Uber pool, right? He's like, you know, I died. And I was like, pardon? He goes, I was clinically dead. Cancer. And I cured it. And I was like, how? And he's like, bee stings. And he goes, open the glove box.
That is the scariest thing. I swear to God. Thing
I'm putting this in a script.
Guy.
I open it. There was a fucking clear box full of bees.
Oh.
Live bees. And he goes, you know, I'm looking for a sting, buddy. And I was like, anyway, here's fine.
Reese Mitchell sent this to us. Bee venom rapidly killing cancerous cells, breast cancer cells.
And he was part, like, I actually haven't written back to his last message. I'm like, man, that's great. He's like, post about it.
That is insane.
Wow.
Crazy,
happened in WA.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, Harry Perkins.
Wow.
Which is a research centre in WA.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
There's actually a Netflix doco about it on at the moment. It's called Unwell. And like one of the episodes, the last episode is about all about this. It's crazy.
It turns out that that person was right and that there was some truth in what they were saying. But they also said that, you know, this was an alien simulation. So maybe that's what we'll find out next. Maybe that's what the age will post next, because it's pretty shocking to think of how important bees really are for us. And more and more, you know, if something I would really enforce if I had any influence is like every spare rooftop, you have to have like a rooftop garden with a beehive. That would
did
be like
Joshua one of them.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, did.
Yeah.
For sure. Like this is, so my dad's birthday is coming up and we've always wanted to get a beehive for the backyard. And so for his birthday, we're getting a beehive.
Great.
And so it's like, it's a rental thing. And so you pay like $400 a year and they come every few weeks or whatever. And they, you know, maintain the hive and check if there's any diseases and stuff. But I'm fired up for it.
Well, you can install a sort of a tap on the back and honey will come out.
Yeah, there's like a flow. I think it's that specific one's like Flow Hive. I think the brand is. It's like a specific like beehive thing. Yeah. But like we get like 10 kg of honey as well.
Well, even honey, like local honey can really help with hay fever, you know, because it has the pollen in it. The bees are unbelievable. We'd be fucking dead without them. Mm. Have no food. I mean, now they're curing people potentially a little bit. They're quite good for pain and inflammation. But they have to die. So it's like,
yeah, that's
wow.
The sad bit.
I know. Slightly annoying.
How would Martyrs. He have even, like, how would you have been the sting buddy? Do you actually just hold the
I think
bee
I would have gone to his house or sat in his Uber in a car park and just, like, run bees down his spine and he would have done the same to me.
Oh, God.
How many is he doing?
I think a lot. I mean, his tub was fucking packed with bees. It was like a box, like a lunch box full of bees. Yeah. It is sad. So it's cruel.
That was just picking them up with his finger and then just putting it on his back?
Yeah.
Like,
he obviously knows how to handle it.
How do you even pick up a bee? Like, how do you do that?
Also, that's so sad because you'd have to like twist them around. Mm. Like you'd pick them up, twist them around and then like, how do you even shove it into something?
It's no clue. I'm sure he was going to teach me all of it.
If that hadn't happened to me, I would have been like, can you please pull the car over right now?
I was a bit that vibe. I was like, I was happy it was a pool at that point.
Yeah,
oh, for sure. Yeah,
but I told, I think I mentioned on the show, I gave him 5 stars because I probably shouldn't have, because I'm like, what if someone with a bee allergy gets in? But like, I did think about that later, but The bees were very much enclosed. They were in the glove box, in a box that was like locked shut. Did they
have breathing space? Like,
yeah, there's holes in it.
Holes. Yeah.
Also, I wonder if like the venom is to do with when they pollinate, like rather than just being stuck in the box. So they might not be actual, not be useful, or might not actually cure.
Yeah,
anything if they can't pollinate and everything.
That's true. Pollen. That's I don't know.
It's also 5 stars as well, because if another cancer patient gets in.
Hello.
Yeah,
sure.
I just thought like people need to have experiences like this. Just going back to what I was saying, I'm like, this is a really eccentric experience which will change, maybe change the course of your life, this interaction. So I don't know. I love those kind of people. I think they're such gifts when you run into someone like that that will completely like wobble your worldview, and just it's an experience that you'll very rarely have.
So where are you going to put the bees anyway, Mace? Are you just in the backyard?
In the backyard, yeah. We've got like a little pool section. So I think we'll just start with one hive.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm pretty sure there are a lot of bees in one hive.
Yeah.
Is it a box that you kind of lift up? It's like one of...
Yeah. It's like a... I have no idea how big the box is. Maybe like 2 to 3 foot long, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like... Yeah, it's like a whatever square. And then I don't know what the deal is or what they do in there, but...
You should get one of the office.
Hopefully make somewhere. Honey.
Yeah, make honey.
You'd hope. So,
yeah. But what, I don't know, like structurally, like what are they, if it's just a, like must be something in the box with like grills.
I think you're right, Greg.
Yeah, there
it's
are.
Like grills. For when I volunteered at something a few years ago, we went and visited like a, this like hive in Perth, and she showed us all, picked it up and showed us all the bees and the hives and everything, and quite interesting.
Yeah, they're brilliant creatures.
Mm.
They're such hard workers too.
I know. Rely on them so much.
How good would it be to be the queen?
What a
life. Oh, just my God. You just get fed all day long. Everyone's obsessed with you.
Yeah.
You just...
They're big. Hey, they're like actually a massive.
Super
big
strong. Dogs. You know.
In control of everyone.
Yeah.
What makes it a queen? Is it just born that way? Like how does a normal bee turn into a queen?
Oh, I mean, you're born into it, like the royal family.
The royal family. Bee royal family.
I don't know.
Queen Elizabeth, yeah.
They have little crowns.
Do they just sit in the middle of the hive and everyone just gives them food, brings them food and stuff?
You know, I don't know enough about bees.
Look it up.
I wish we could get the driver on the show.
I've got it. So a bee becomes a queen bee thanks to the efforts of the existing worker bees in the hive. A young larva... Okay, a newly hatched baby insect is fed special food called royal jelly by the worker bees, and royal jelly is richer than the food given to the worker larvae and is necessary for the larva to develop into a fertile queen bee.
So there's peasant food and then there's queen food.
You are right.
It is like the royals.
It really is.
Wow.
Well, we're just a part of nature too, right?
Mm.
You know?
Also, the queen bee stays fertile for her entire life.
Solid.
Wow.
But you saw the bees.
I mean, is that why it's so fat? Because it's pregnant all the time?
pop that into Google.
Why are queen bees fat?
Is it because they're pregnant all the time?
Oh, my God. So sometimes the queen bee goes missing from the hive under these circumstances, or when the queen bee dies, the worker bees need to find a new queen. So if she dies, if she's still alive, the worker bees may kill her, or they may let her live alongside the new queen bee until she dies naturally.
Oh. What makes the? Oh. I wonder how they decide. Well, they get together and talk about it.
They're like, to the gallows.
Fascinating creatures. I think they. I think I'm becoming very interested in bees.
Yeah, I am too now.
Get a beehive.
They're pretty amazing animals.
Hang on, so is the queen bee the only one popping out kids?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I don't know, actually.
That's actually interesting.
Ancestral then. There's just too many brothers and sisters flying about.
That's actually a good point. Like, I wonder what happens with the DNA. But it says here a queen can lay up to 2,000 eggs a day, which is one egg every 43 seconds.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Maybe they are the only one then.
Is one to 1.5 millimeters long.
And does each egg become a bee?
And are they all male? Because fuck that sausage fest.
Are we all Googling bees right now? Because I'm Googling not.
One of my professors at uni, she studied bees and honey and all that, and looking at the bacterial signals between honey and how bees help with stuff like that, which is quite interesting.
That's crazy.
I know.
What about like Manuka so bees? Uses. Like a Manuka queen bee must be worth so much cash.
But isn't Manuka just the flower or just the plant?
Bee tries it.
Bee trading. Bee coin. We should get into bee coin. They only live 152 days, a honey bee. And by the way, it shows you how little I know about them. I accidentally said bees are an animal. But that's just... That's nice. You know.
Oh, well, but the queens live between 2 and 4 years.
Oh, okay. Maybe they are the only ones popping out kids, and then the new queen comes along and takes over.
What a sad existence.
I feel like
well,
we need to all watch a bee movie. We should watch bee movie together.
With Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
That's great.
Zach Ruane from Auntie Donna. You know, are you friends with the Auntie Donna boys, Reese?
Well, actually, funny story. Broden has dated my cousin for many, many years. So Broden's like family.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I'm really close with the Auntie Donna guys. They're great.
That's so good.
They're so funny.
That's so good. But anyway, I was going to say that Zach is doing a live reading of the B-movie script on Instagram.
Really?
So we could all tune in. We've been doing a bit of screenplay writing ourselves. Josh has been obsessed with getting index cards and we're doing masterclass and that sort of thing. So maybe we could learn a thing or two from you as a professional screenwriter.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I can do my best to try to help.
Basically, we brought in this segment called Screenplay Sundays, where every Sunday we'll run through a script and we'll give each other feedback and stuff. So here's a few highlights from that. On Sundays, it can be Screenwriting Sundays or Screenplay Sundays.
Oh, I love this. This is great. Yeah.
We run through a scene that one of us has written.
Now that I've got the index cards, I've got sort of everything that I need.
So the main thing with screenwriting is you need a clear intention and an obstacle.
The first time you mention a character's name, they should be in all capital letters.
We see a young man, Tommy, nervously pacing around on the bottom floor near the lifts.
If you're reading this, it means I'm dead.
Yeah, just a liter of that, thanks. I'll be there in 5.
Ah! He slams on the brakes and does a U-turn. 7:44.
Sorry, mate, I can't serve you without a mask, champ.
Sevs, this is an improv. Read the script. You were umming and ahhing. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Like, I reckon there were more words that you put into the script than you actually read. Not on.
It's what great actors do.
Not on.
Can we confirm or deny that? At a table read, do you improv a little bit or are you reading word for word?
At a table read, no way. But there are times in auditions that you will improv a little bit, you know, but sometimes it can be a real error. It could really, you know, ruin the sort of cadence and the rhythm of the scene or the script. And if they're really particular, they might not like it. But I've had experiences where I auditioned for like a Judd Apatow film that hasn't come out yet. In my audition, the casting director, who is so good, she just started improvising and I didn't know that that was coming, but it's obviously the style in which they cast. And so we just started improvising the rest of the scene. And then, I couldn't do it because I was in LA and not New York anyway, but it was just a tiny little thing, but, yeah, it was really fun. So I just like suddenly it was improv and we're going off the book. But generally you don't unless, or you can ask. You could do like one take on the book, word for word, and then you could be like, could I try another one and play with it a bit or whatever. But it's always polite, I think, to ask, because if the writer's in the room too, they might be offended. They might find it like, you know, you don't know.
Destroying the script, yeah.
Yeah, and if someone's super precious as well. Yeah. It really depends. I feel like with comedies, generally you have more room for that. Unless it's really tightly written, you know, and it's all like punchy and like there's lots of beats and people go off each other. Like, I don't know. I think it's script by script. But in a table read, no, I don't know of that happening. Because you got to hear the script. You got to hear how it sounds. You got to like
sure.
hear, like imagine the world. It's the first time it ever is like read out by and brought to life by different voices and actors and stuff. Mm. Table reads are so great.
Are you putting in like 100% in a table read, or are you kind of dialing it back a little bit?
Yeah, you're not putting in 100%, but you're definitely creating the feel of the world.
Yeah.
Because like the producers and stuff and the director and everyone will be there. And they'll hear it for the first time. And they can use it to rewrite. A lot of the time you'll table read and then they'll rewrite off that. They make me more nervous than going onto set though.
Really?
Yeah, because it's the first time you meet everyone. And it's like reading in front of the class. I find table reads really scary and intimidating.
Well, I just want to know why you did it. Like, what were you thinking about it, or were you just...
It's just like,
feeling it.
Just sort of making it a bit like...
He's just a great actor.
Yeah, I'm a great actor. Yeah.
It's like, I need to personalize this a little bit more.
Yeah, it wasn't like I was adding, you know, whole sentences. It was just adding like an and an ah here and there, you know?
Yeah.
Like it wasn't...
I got in trouble for that once in an audition.
So did
for
I.
For umming and ahhing. Yeah, so did you.
How do you stop that? I think I have a problem with that.
Um and ahs?
Yeah. I don't know.
How the shit do you remember lines? Like, I couldn't imagine getting a big document of words and remembering it.
I know. It can be really hard. It can be really hard. It's just something you have to practice over and over and find ways. There's apps that can help. There's just like... Marlon Brando used to stick them all around the room and put them on the back of his coffee cup and stuff. So you'd do a scene and you'd be reading the coffee cup or...
Are you like flashcarding it? Like if you got a bunch of index cards?
Sometimes I do what I call teleprompter, and I'll have the person that I'm reading with scrolling on the computer behind the camera. Sure. Sometimes if it's a lot and it's like specific and I have to get it all correct, and they'll scroll and read... And I'll use the computer as my eye line instead of the person and then just read. And sometimes it gives a really authentic audition because you're kind of saying it for the first time like you would if it was real life.
Mm-hmm. Reese, I've actually written a screenplay.
Great.
So I thought in spirit of Screenplay Sundays, it's in the Zoom chat. So if you guys open it up in Zoom, there's a little PDF.
Name.
Reese, you just, can yeah go on
just quickly. I was gonna say, first piece of feedback, Reese, what do we think of the formatting of the script?
So far seems okay.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so this is Fade In. It's free. You can still use it free, or if you want to pay for the full version, you get free updates, which is great.
Okay,
there you go.
Whereas with Final Draft you think you have to pay for updates, right?
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, so Reese, you can call the action.
Do you mean do you want me to read the big print?
Yep, read the big print and everyone else is just their characters.
Okay. The Wedding Magician, written by George Martin. Copyright, Hump Day Replay. Interior lounge room morning. We see a young man, Reese, sitting at his round dining table shuffling cards. His housemate, GB, enters with a cup of tea.
White with two? How are you feeling?
Today's the day. I think if I start with my red-black trick, that will set the tone. I should be a shoo-in.
Great idea. So what time are you meeting them?
It's actually just over Zoom, which is awesome. The bride is called Grace and the groom is Mason. Apparently they've auditioned 10 magicians before me, so pressure's on.
You'll be right. Just breathe.
Thanks, mate. You're the best housemate and I appreciate you. I'm just going to join the Zoom now. Reese puts his tea to the side and opens up the computer. Grace and Mason are waiting on the Zoom.
Hey, Reese. Lovely to meet you.
Likewise. Thanks so much for the opportunity. And welcome to Reese's Pieces of Magic.
So if you just want to give us your first trick, we're ready when you are.
Good luck, mate.
Reese puts on his top hat and grabs his cards. He begins shuffling them. We can see his hand shaking with nerves. GB is out of shot, giving him thumbs up. Reese drops the cards and they spray all over the floor. One sec.
Look, I think we've seen enough here.
Give him a chance.
Reese fumbly, picks up the cards when he notices a message written on the Four of Hearts. It's from a rival magician called Jess. We hear Jess's voice as he reads the note.
Keep this handy. You'll need it.
As he sits back at the table, the Zoom call has ended. GB is nowhere to be seen. And it seems he has entered another realm. Reese stares at the Four of Hearts. What the hell? He looks down and sees he is now wearing a tuxedo. He turns his head and walks towards a strange black curtain and peeks around the corner. He's backstage at a magic show. Jess is performing on stage to much applause and laughter. The bride and groom are front and center.
And which card do you have?
It's the Four of Hearts.
Jess turns and points at Reese, who is half on stage. He shows the crowd the Four of Hearts he's holding and they go wild. The card then turns into a beehive and he gets attacked by bees and dies.
Sorry, buddy, but there's no place for the two of us in this industry.
End scene. Wow.
There we go. It's a horror.
Oh, it's a horror. It's not bad. It's very much like it wraps up very quickly.
Well, that's the thing. That was going to be my feedback to myself as well. Because I started writing this and I was like, I mean, when you're writing, do you have the whole story in mind when you start writing or are you just...
Yeah, you would
do you
like...
kind of figure it as you go?
No, I generally would outline it first and I'd write out all the acts and the scenes within them. And then, you know, I'd write it out as like a paragraph with ideas of what the dialogue might be and stuff like that. And you would know your story and what, you know, the arcs of the story and where the structure of it. And then you would start to script it up after you've written the outline would be my general approach.
Fair enough. Yeah, so I just started writing and I just, you know, just see what happens.
Oh, that's fine too. Who cares? I mean, that's...
When I got into the another realm part, I just confused myself and I was going to go maybe like I wanted somehow to it to be a go back in time type thing and Jess had done the trick and I don't know. So then I just like, how am I going to end this?
I wouldn't give up on it. I mean, it's like a first draft. Just keep working on it. I just think it's very much like, and it was all a dream at this point.
Yeah. You said read word
exactly.
Up.
Yeah. So yeah. I think
like, should have turned into a Jay-Z film clip. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would look at just open it up again and maybe outline it a bit more. It could be good. The beehive is like very kind of left of center.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But maybe that's fine. I would track that early though. I would plant that somehow. Well, like suddenly bees, he's a bee or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
That just seems so odd.
You could be having your cup of tea in the backyard on the balcony and there are plants with bees flying around them.
That's what I mean by tracking the bees. Like just plant that idea and then maybe try to explain it somehow.
I like that. What other tips? Like what's your creative process when you're writing? Is that a dumb question? Is there one?
I don't think, I mean, everybody is different and I don't think there are any real rules. I generally just like write. So it's like that Uber story, right? I'd write that out and then I'd think about how could I turn that into a film that actually has like a three act structure or has some sort of theme or message or whatever. And then I might, it might not as a standalone, it might not just be a piece within something else. And then I would just try to take all these different ideas I have. Like when I was writing my pilot, we had a document for like 60 pages of ideas. Jeez. for the series. And then we would look at our favorite ideas. But then we'd also have to think about the themes of the episode that are going to, you know, reflect throughout the show, the origin story of how these people meet each other. So it all depends on what it is. Like if you're writing a short film, it might just be like, what's a message you want to convey or an interesting story you heard, but then how can you structure it so it actually makes an interesting film that an audience is going to like as well. And then you start to, outline the acts and then I would script it up.
So are you then some way like detached from what it's going to become? Because it might actually be like you might go into it thinking, oh, this could be like a film or a pilot episode for a TV show, but it's actually then becomes one little bit within something that's larger.
Yeah, it could for sure. I mean, it depends on like when I wrote my pilot, I knew that it had to be within that structure. So I knew I was writing a pilot. I knew I wanted to write a TV series. And then that's what we were commissioned to do. So that had like the boundaries. I actually like those creative restrictions because I sometimes find them more creative when I have rules.
Totally. Something to go off, I guess.
Yeah. And also
rather than
like
just being given anything.
Yeah. If it's too vast, I think you don't, it's can be confronting. I sometimes like the idea of like, it can only be 30 minutes or it can be 5 minutes.
Sure.
Like, I personally like those restrictions.
Well, it's like I've heard people compare it to the edge of the canvas. You know, if you've got a time restraint, or you've got a certain amount of time to do something as well. Like, if you give yourself unlimited time to create something, you're going to take all the time in the world and probably never finish it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's like everybody's approach is so different, and there's so many different types of storytellers and filmmakers and TV writers and. Whatever puts you in a space where you can be you can write your most original and creative ideas is the approach you should take. I don't think I watched that David Lynch masterclass and he doesn't even like understand writer's block, you know, like he's just like,
really?
He just follows he like meditates on ideas and then writes his films based on images he's seen that he might not necessarily understand. And he's like, his stories show themselves to him as he writes sort of thing or as he meditates. So that's pretty interesting. And then I know people that are really rigid with their writing.
What does that mean?
Well, they've really conformed to structure and to the rules of screenwriting, to like classic screenwriting. So
like plot point here.
Yeah,
point
exactly.
Here, like that sort of thing.
Like an archetypal plot or whatever, you know.
Is it like a discipline thing? If you have writer's block, do you just take the day off or do you try and go through it?
I don't know. I sometimes think it's good to do stuff like my friend who I work with a lot, Jessica Barclay Lawton, who I've made a bunch of short films with. She allows herself to write for 2 hours a day. And even if she's on a roll, she'll stop, which is kind of cool. And if she's not getting anything out, she has to just like try for 2 hours. I think that's pretty cool. I personally would just like move on to a different thing. So something my girlfriend and I would do when we were trying to write scripts, because she writes as well, we would do 15 minutes of stream of consciousness writing. So if we couldn't write anything else, we'd just do stream of consciousness writing. And you kind of can surprise yourself with the things that come out. It could be really simple, like talking about the carpet in the room or whatever it is, but it just gets you into that headspace and like...
That's crazy. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm still learning. Like I'm very like, I've only, I studied screenwriting, but I've only really been technically a professional writer for like a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my pilot was the first thing I wrote for a company for somebody else, but everything else was like short films or just things for myself.
So with the pilot, have you got the whole series sort of mapped out? But it's not completely written. And then the first episode, you've written a whole script. Is that the vibe?
We gave examples of other episodes and then like an overall arc of like where the characters would end up and how they help each other and the journey. But no, because like even the pilot changed so much. And then with notes from the network and stuff, it changes. So you've got to be a bit open because you're also working like for a business or for a company that want to make it like a show that people want to watch. So... Yeah, I don't know.
Any interest in writing theatre or anything?
I don't think that's really my skill, personally. I really like screen, but I like reading plays, you know, but it's not... I like theatre, but I don't think it's like... It's not what I studied and it's not what I really... It's not the world I know, which sometimes makes me feel like a fraud as an actor.
Really?
Yeah, for sure, because I have friends that have, you know, been on Broadway and stuff in the States and I feel like...
In the acting world, are people saying that theatre is like the pinnacle? Kind of a hierarchy?
It depends on the person. I felt like when I went to New York City, it did feel that way. But in LA, it's all about TV and film, you know? But it depends on the person. There's like more culture around theatre for sure. Like that feels more like highbrow. to be honest. It feels like a different type of actor, which I'm sure you can imagine. And then, but I personally love screen.
Yeah. What about when you're writing in, have you written in a writer's room with like a bunch of other people before? And
yeah, I guess with my pilot I did. I wrote with two other people. And then if we got the show, we were going to build a writer's room.
Okay.
Which would be so cool.
Like whiteboarding and that sort of thing?
Yeah, for sure. We did all of that.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, I'd love to be in a writer's room. Like, it'd be like this, but you're just all riffing on like...
but with good ideas.
Well, I mean, they're not bad ideas. No idea is better than another idea. It's all about how you do it, right? Like, it's all basically recycled. Like, the stories we're telling and stuff. It's just a different approach.
How long does it take to write a pilot, or how long did it take to write your pilot?
It took us... Oh, man. It took
especially
us
especially if you were saying you, like, you have to give, like, an over... Yeah. You know, the story arc and the characters, like development and stuff, like that's quite a process.
Well, our approach was we shot some scenes. So we wrote little sketches first and like vignettes. We wrote like 10 of them. And then we actually wrote more, and they were just like dialogue. Like what you wrote, George, about that size. I'm serious, about that length.
Yeah.
We wrote 10 of them, but we had a lot of ideas and we picked... So I say we wrote 10, we wrote like maybe 30, 40 scenes like that, that represented the characters. And it was basically odd couple relationship, you know? And then we shot 10 and we edited them and we looked at them like, is there something here? And then like, where could it go? And then we started mapping that out, and then we pitched it with broad brush strokes of what the pilot might look like, what the series might look like, and what other episodes might look like. And the network had seen those shorts, so they understood the dynamic. And then, so overall, it was like a year, I'd say.
Oh, wow.
Maybe more, doing the shooting and the writing of everything. And we'd been talking about it for like a year and a half.
Wow.
And then the actual pilot writing was a few months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then did the pilot have to change a bit as you were kind of thinking in the future about
characters? It did.
Yeah.
And it changed with the notes from the network, but then we got more notes, and then COVID shut production down, as I mentioned. So then we just like the last set of notes, we just left it because it was like, well, it's probably not going ahead right now.
Heartbreaking.
It is, yeah. It's really, it's so annoying because you develop it with a network and then you create a relationship, and then if it can't happen, you start again, basically. And another network might have completely different ideas. So
yeah, right.
You know, it's stressful. It was a real come down, I gotta say.
It would have been.
Yeah.
I did a bit of Googling of you last night, actually, just on YouTube, and I came across a bunch of old sketches with Paul Foot.
Oh my god.
What's the go there? That was hilarious.
Oh, so I met Paul through my friend. Do you guys know Paul? Do you all know Paul?
No. Yeah. I mean, I've only seen him at the comedy festival.
He's like his first show was directed by Noel Fielding. He has that sort of, you know, like surreal sort of
Mighty Boosh
kind of comedy. He's very intelligent. I mean, he studied mathematics at Oxford. He's like a brilliant mind. And he ended up becoming a comedian because he didn't know what else to do, is what he said. and yeah, he's a really eccentric, like a real eccentric. And we just used to hang out when he came to Melbourne to do the comedy fest. I met him through my friend Miles Munn, who's another comedian. He was like, you got to meet this guy, you know. Like first time he went to his house, he had this like blue jelly. It was like the only thing in his fridge, like a pre-made jelly. And he's like, invited him over to like see the jelly. He's like wobbling. He's like, it's so artificial. And like, he's just like on another planet, but he's just such a sweetie. Yeah. And then, we just started hanging out and shooting little sketches together. Cause he just loved, you know, just making things up on the spot, improv, just have fun and put them out.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you can tell.
Yeah.
You can tell in those videos. They're just fun little videos.
They're so silly. Like sometimes I'm like, why did you post that? Like we were just like mucking around on our iPhone and I'm like, why'd you put that on YouTube?
YouTube.
You know?
I love it.
Yeah. I used to have a lot more sketches on YouTube, but I got rid of all of them. Thank God.
Really? Yeah. Right.
From like when I was 19.
When you get a role in an actual paid gig, not like a sketch that you're doing for YouTube.
Yeah.
How does your manager communicate it with you? Is it a phone call?
Yeah, or an email. Usually a phone call, actually. Every time I've booked a job, it was a phone call, which is always cool because it will say like, I remember the first time I booked a job, I was literally loading a van full of like seafood. I was working at some for some restaurant and I'd auditioned for this thing and it was like the United States was calling me and I was like, this has got to be like, you know, some telemarketer or something. And it was my manager and I didn't know who it was. And they're like, you got the job, you're going to Florida. And then like 2 weeks later, I was living in Miami.
Oh,
and that's when I did that FX series Shark Lords. That was so strange because like, yeah, two weeks I was meant to be on a plane and have a visa and everything. It was crazy. Oh. And it was inauguration weekend. Like Trump was just coming in. Oh. So it was like everything was delayed at like for visas and stuff, but it managed to happen. And they just had to push my flight by a week. But there was like a window where they were like, maybe he won't be able to do it. And that was really stressful too. But yeah, so you just get a call and then your life can change quite dramatically and you live in another country and that's it. And so you're always like living out of a bag. I mean, at the last 2.5 years in LA, I lived out of a bag. I'm still living out of a bag. Like I don't have a fixed address anymore. You know, I lived in cupboards and everything.
About that though, like just working, you know, living out of a bag, auditioning.
You know what's acting. So funny? My favorite room that I had in LA was my friend's like walk-in wardrobe that I just like decked out with fairy lights. And it was like truly like living in a coffin. It was like my feet would touch the wall when I slept and like it was tiny, but it was like this, it just, I have this memory of like, I don't know. I felt like I was really grinding. Like I was like, I'm compromising, you know, and I'm living in a cupboard and I'm going to work my butt off. So then when you do actually get a job or something, it feels so good because you're like, now I can get a room. And then my next room, I like lived on, I think it was Eagle Rock Boulevard and it was so loud. It sounded like there were motorbikes in my room. It was like right on the highway. It was horrible. And then like every room slowly got a little bit better. And then I finally got a fixed address and then had to move back because of COVID. It's all right though. Geez. It builds your character, right?
Well, you got a fixed address and this week, big developments for big media company in the Daily Talk Show. We got a fixed phone number so people can call big media company and actually talk to Josh or Tom or Jess or Mason. Pretty much everyone except me, actually.
Lucky. And,
and so that's exciting. So there's a big investment there. And also after that, we'll hear you giving us your rundown on your hierarchy of communication methods.
We've invested. It sounds like a silly thing to invest in. A phone number.
The number is 0399810408. And when you Google our phone number, what you'll find is big media company's phone number used to be Zero's phone number, the accounting software. Because every time someone has a question about how to reconcile something, they call.
Do you have a hierarchy within sort of comms?
What is it? Love an email.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to be email buddies?
Yeah. Seriously? Absolutely. Genuinely. Email, number one. Then text message. And then Instagram DM. I hate talking on phone calls.
Is it?
Yeah, you don't answer much.
I don't answer phone calls. They freak me out.
I'd love to start an email relationship with you. So let's do that.
Literally, you can. He never did. I send him two emails.
Did you?
He sent me one.
You up.
Yeah. I was like, I like being pen pals. I love a letter. I like writing things out, like formulating what I want to say and put it down in writing. Emails are great for me. And also I can reflect back on them. You know, I'm such a, I'm going to go a bit woo woo here, but I'm such a Capricorn. Like sometimes I'll reread emails I've written that I'm proud of because of how well I feel like I wrote the email and formulated my idea. I'm like, wow, that's a great email. I want to relive that.
I relate to that so much.
Yeah?
Really? Have you done that, Jess?
Yeah. I always go back into my sent folders and like reread emails that I've sent during the day.
And totally. The ones that Josh complains about and you just want to go, hang on.
Yeah, probably. Oh, well, yeah, so that's what first came to my mind when you played that, because Josh has an issue with emails and reading emails. He just doesn't do it and he just doesn't respond.
Yep.
Wow.
It's a real sticking point with us because
you obviously love an email and you're good at it.
It's my job.
Well, Jess, if you want to email me, you can email me anytime and maybe we should start the pen pal relationship.
Yeah.
Because Josh did not come through.
Yeah. He says that when emails are too long, that the words are dancing on the page. I know. It makes no sense.
You know what's funny about Josh? I always say this. At first, you don't realize how kind of lateral his thinking is and how eccentric he is. You know what I mean? The more you get to know him, the more kind of peculiar and interesting and funny he is.
Yeah, totally.
Would agree. Sure.
Definitely.
It's cool.
We all agree.
He's the gift that keeps on giving, I'd say.
Mm. For sure. Just... What do you think about the phone number? And we didn't really touch on it in the snippet, but we've also now got little chat boxes on the website. Yeah. he's actually been obsessing over it, to be honest, because like Grace has got messages from Josh just being like, can you hop on the live chat for me? I want to talk to you.
He's like, I just want to test it out. I'm like, okay, just get on there.
I've also had random DMs with him on the website chat box.
And they're like half an hour conversations. Like they're not short. They're not a test. It's a full on.
Does it come through to his computer or his phone? How does it work?
It's a computer, and then the phone will also go through the phone and the computer. But yeah. Jess, what do you think about the phone?
I mean, I'm on board now. Like with anything, like Asana, Spark. What else have we got that we use? It's just introducing it when things, you know, are simple another way. But once you get used to it, it's fine. You integrate it into your working life. I haven't actually used it properly yet, and no one's called me on it yet, but except for Josh, obviously. But yeah, the thing that I find funny about it is the recording, the script writing.
Oh yeah, so the phone not only grabs a transcript of the conversation, it also records the call so you can play it back.
Oh no.
Oh really?
Which
it's like a telemarketer thing.
To be honest, like there must be some training privacy purposes. Thing where you're saying that it needs to be recorded for training purposes. Or
there probably should be.
I think you can flick it on and off though, that's the thing. Yeah. And so he recorded our conversation and my name came up as
Oh my God.
Jeff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I'm on board. It's fine. Like, it's you're still working off your mobile, really. I would rather pick up the phone and get an answer straight away than have to wait for a text message back.
Mm. I understand that with some things, but I think when I was talking about not loving a phone call, it's more like when people just want to chat for like quite a while. I'm kind of like, you know, this could have been an email sort of thing, you know.
Chuck it in an email.
Pop it in an email. Just like hit the dot points. Like, I don't know. I've got some friends that like they call and were just, you know, are quite verbose and will just talk at me for a long time. And it could just, I don't know.
Sometimes, are you a dot point guy in emails?
I think so. Like, I just want to know what. Yeah, I think so.
Long emails or short emails?
Either's good. I like an email.
Just an email in general.
Yeah, I think I just like to read the thing so I can like reread it and like Tommy's got a real issue with me not answering the phone. It's like been a part of our relationship, like consistently. But I called him yesterday. We had a good chat. So
to finish up, that could be quite a good segue. You are, you know, Tommy's oldest and best friend. So I've just cut together a few little moments of when you were mentioned, just so you can feel good about yourself. That's, I guess, nice.
Reese Mitchell.
Ladies and gentlemen, Reese Mitchell from Uber.
He's excited because he's got his mate in the building. Tommy and Reese, best mates since they were 5 years old.
For me, your household as a kid growing up was like, it could have almost had its own TV show.
What was growing up with Tommy like?
Just quickly while Reese does that, I'm getting beers.
Oh, Jesus. He needs a drink for me to open up about our history together.
I was given this T-shirt for my 18th birthday from Reese Mitchell.
Oh, my God. It's Tommy Jacket.
Oh, my God. Is that Tommy Jacket?
I mean, Reese Mitchell is probably the only one that he's a solid friend.
Yeah.
Me and him did gymnastics together, but he did drama.
My homie, my best mate, who I haven't seen in ages because he lives in LA now. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see him.
The last drive-in cinema I went to was with Reese Mitchell and his dad.
One of my favourite name drops is, you know, Con the Fruiterer?
Yeah, I'm best mates with his son.
I mean, his dad was Con the Fruiterer.
My best mate, yeah, Con the Fruiterer.
Well, my dad is Mark Mitchell. He's not Con the Fruiterer.
Yes.
Can remember when I got punched from the side? Were you at that party?
Yeah, I was there.
There you go. Sticking by him even when he gets his nose broken.
Oh, man. Far out. That's nothing. I love Tommy. I am, you know, till death do us part.
That's nice. Yeah, we do love Tommy.
He's great. He's a very loyal friend. He's one of the most encouraging and supportive friends I've ever had and consistent. And we've been through a lot together. So, you know, he's a lifer.
No, that's nice.
That's cute.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming on, Reese. That was lots of fun. Thanks for the feedback for the script.
Mm.
And I don't know, next time when we can hang out together, it'd be fun to film some stuff and actually write some sketches.
Yeah, why don't we do a thing where you write a first draft and even if you're unsure about it, we make it.
Oh, I love that.
That'd be funny because even if the scripts need a lot of work, I think it'll be funny. I think that'll be like interesting.
I'd love to film a sketch with you. I think it'd be heaps fun.
Oh, well, that's something to look forward to. You got to have hope. Hope in the darkness while this stuff is around, and hope we got to just keep staying creative and optimistic and doing stuff like this.
That's exactly it.
Thanks for having me so much.
Thanks for having me so much. Catch you later, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.